Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. This is Book 10, Chapter 22. Staggering amid the crush, Pierre looked about him. "Count Peter Kirillovich, how did you get here?" said a voice. Pierre looked round. Boris Drubetskoy, brushing his knees with his hand, he had probably saw them when he too had knelt before the icon, came up to him, smiling. Boris was elegantly dressed with a slightly martial touch appropriate to a campaign. He wore a long coat and, like Kutuzov, had a whip slung across his shoulder. Meanwhile, Kutuzov had reached the village and seated himself in the shade of the nearest house, on a bench which one Cossack had run to fetch and another had hastily covered with a rug. An immense and brilliant suite surrounded him. The icon was carried further, accompanied by the throng. Throng, it's a funny word. THRONG. Throng. Ever been part of a throng? Ever thronged behind an icon? Pierre stopped some 30 paces from Kutuzov, talking to Boris. He explained his wish to be present at the battle and to see the position. "This is what you must do," said Boris. "I will do the honours of the camp for you. You will see everything best from where Count Bennigsen will be. I am attendant on him, you know. I'll mention it to him. But if you want to ride around the position, come along with us. We are just going to the left flank. Then, when we get back, do spend the night with me and we'll arrange a game of cards. Of course, you know, Dmitri Sergeyevich. Those are his quarters." And he pointed to the third house in the village of the Gorky. "But I should like to see the right flank. They say it's very strong," said Pierre. "I should like to start from the Moskva River and ride round the whole position." "Well, you can do that later, but the chief thing is the left flank." "Yes, yes, but where is Prince Bolkonski's regiment? Can you point it out to me?"
"Prince Andrew's?
We shall pass it, and I'll take you to him."
"What about the left flank?" asked Pierre.
"To tell you the truth, between ourselves, God only knows what state our left flank is in," said Boris, confidentially lowering his voice. "It is not at all what Count Bennigsen intended. He meant to fortify that knoll quite differently, but..." Boris shrugged his shoulders. "His Serene Highness would not have it. Or someone persuaded him. You see..." But Boris did not finish. For at that moment, Kayserov, Kutuzov's adjutant, came up to Pierre.
"Ah, Kayserov," said Boris, addressing him with an unembarrassed smile. "I was just trying to explain our position to the Count. It is amazing how His Serene Highness could so foresee the intentions of the French."
"You mean the left flank?" asked Kayserov.
"Yes, exactly. The left flank is now extremely strong."
Though Kutuzov had dismissed all unnecessary men from the staff, Boris had contrived to remain at headquarters after the changes. He had established himself with Count Bennigsen, who, like all on whom Boris had been in attendance, considered young Prince Drubetskoy an invaluable man. In the higher command, there were two sharply defined parties, Kutuzov's party and that of Bennigsen, the chief of staff. Boris belonged to the latter, and no one else, while showing servile respect to Kutuzov, could so create an impression that the old fellow was not much good, and that Bennigsen managed everything. Now the decisive moment of battle had come when Kutuzov would be destroyed and the power passed to Bennigsen, or even to Kutuzov. If Kutuzov won the battle, it would be felt that everything was done by Bennigsen. In any case, many great rewards would have to be given for tomorrow's action, and new men would come to the front, so Boris was full of nervous vivacity all that day. After Kayserov, others whom Pierre knew came up to him, and he had not time to reply to all the questions about Moscow that were showered upon him, or to listen to all that was told to him.
The faces all expressed animation and apprehension, but it seemed to Pierre that the cause of the excitement shown in some of these faces lay chiefly in questions of personal success. His mind, however, was occupied by the different expression he saw on other faces, an expression that spoke not of personal matters but of the universal questions of life and death. Kutuzov noticed Pierre's figure and the group gathered around him. "Call him to me," said Kutuzov. An adjutant told Pierre of His Serene Highness's wish, and Pierre went towards Kutuzov's bench, but a militiaman got there before him. It was Dolokhov. "How did that fellow get here?" asked Pierre. "He's the creature that wriggles in anywhere," was the answer. "He has been degraded, you know. Now he wants to bob up again. He's been proposing some scheme or other and has crawled into the enemy's piquet line at night. He's a brave fellow." Pierre took off his hat and bowed respectfully to Kutuzov. "I concluded that if I reported to Your Serene Highness, you might send me away or say that you knew what I was reporting. But then I shouldn't lose anything," Dolokhov was saying. "Yes, yes. But if I were right, I should be rendering a service to my fatherland for which I am ready to die." "Yes, yes. And should Your Serene Highness require a man who will not spare his skin, please think of me. Perhaps I may prove useful to Your Serene Highness." "Yes, yes," Kutuzov repeated, his laughing eye narrowing more and more as he looked at Pierre. Just then Boris, with his courtier-like adroitness, stepped up to Pierre's side near Kutuzov, and in a most natural manner, without raising his voice, said to Pierre, as though continuing an interrupted conversation, "The militia have put on clean white shirts to be ready to die. What heroism, Count?" Boris evidently said this to Pierre in order to be overheard by His Serene Highness. He knew Kutuzov's attention would be caught by those words, and so it was. "What are you saying about the militia?" he asked Boris. "Preparing for tomorrow, Your Serene Highness, for death. They have put on clean shirts." "Ah, a wonderful, a matchless people," said Kutuzov, and he closed his eyes and swayed his head. "A matchless people," he repeated with a sigh. "So, you want to smell gunpowder," he said to Pierre. "Yes, it's a pleasant smell. I have the honour to be one of your wife's adorers. Is she well? My quarters are at your service." And as often happens with old people, Kutuzov began looking about absent-mindedly as if forgetting all he wanted to say or do. Then, evidently remembering what he wanted, he beckoned to Andrew Kaysarov, his adjutant's brother. Those verses are Marin's. How do they go, eh? Those he wrote about Jurakov. Lectures for the corpse, indicting. Recite them. Said he, evidently preparing to laugh. Kaysarov recited. Kutuzov smilingly nodded his head to the rhythm of the verses. When Pierre had left Kutuzov, Dolokhov came up to him and took his hand. "I am very glad to meet you here, Count," he said aloud, regardless of the presence of strangers and in particularly resolute and solemn tone. "On the eve of the day when God alone knows who of us is fated to survive, I am glad of this opportunity to tell you that I regret the misunderstandings that occurred between us, and should wish you not to have any ill feelings for me. I beg you to forgive me." Pierre looked at Dolokhov with a smile, not knowing what to say to him. With tears in his eyes, Dolokhov embraced Pierre and kissed him. Boris said a few words to his general, and Count Bennigsen turned to Pierre and proposed that he should ride with him along the line. "It will interest you," said he. "Yes, very much," replied Pierre. Half an hour later, Kutuzov left for Tatarinova, and Bennigsen and his suite, with Pierre among them, set out on their ride along the line. All right, there we go, another chapter down. We've got the big players in this war movement, and of course we've got this run-in with Pierre and his old nemesis, Dolokhov. And I was surprised at the way that went down. It was like when he walked into the room and Dolokhov was there, the man that slept with his wife and that they had the duel, I thought, oh, this is going to be awkward. But hey, it wasn't. Dolokhov just sort of forgave him, I suppose. Or begged him for forgiveness, I should say. Tried to make amends. Now, Turtle Vader said, how do you think Pierre and Dolokhov will interact in the coming chapters? Rory Lenigan said, I'm not sold on Dolokhov having turned a new leaf, but I think he's genuinely trying to reconnect with Pierre. It seems like Pierre isn't so easily forgiving as his knight's scruples would have him be, but perhaps that is for the better. You know, I went on this big journey with Dolokhov. At first, he was one of my favourite characters. I liked how he was so brazen, dancing with the bear, drinking on that ledge for a dare, doing things that Pierre wouldn't dare to do. I thought that was really, really cool. He was really cool. I kind of had like this Errol Flynn sort of character in my mind. And then, you know, he was sneaky and I didn't like what went down with him and Pierre. But then when I heard that he's on the war effort and that he's been brave and he's been sneaking behind enemy lines and that kind of thing, just now in this chapter, I was like, yeah, Dolokhov is a good guy to have on your side in a war, that's for sure. And hey, I don't know how genuine he's being, but he is trying to make amends with Pierre, so that's kind of cool too. Turtle Vader also says, Pierre runs into Boris, who has ingrained himself in the top echelons of the Russian military. Do you think this will lead to Pierre having more influence in the war? Could do. Boris is that kind of person who, everywhere he goes, he makes a name for himself and he schmoozes all the best people to schmooze. Schmooze, that's another funny word. Gosh. Sorry, it seems I'm easily amused tonight. It may lead to Pierre having more influence in the war, but does Pierre want more influence in the war? You know, I can see him doing his Pierre thing where he clumsily goes along with things and ends up being quite influential in this war effort. He's definitely tangled up with all the top people of the war. Now, another question from Turtle Vader was, there are two camps of thought in the army's high command, Kutuzov and Bennigsen's. Which do you think has more power and control over the war effort? Rory Lenigan said, it seems that Kutuzov, probably owing to his experience as well as his endorsement by the sovereign, is revered by the whole army and the people. But it seems that Bennigsen, or at least Boris and his other adjutants, are more conniving and determined to have things go their way. I'm not sure who is the better commander, though. Kutuzov, although clearly more experienced, seems a bit distracted as the war carries on. He does seem a bit distracted, or even a bit, I don't know if senile is the word, but a bit vague in some chapters, like he's really not paying attention. Anyway, it seems like in the next chapter or so, we're going to see Pierre go on this tour of the war effort, which could be kind of cool to see what he sees as he goes on this little tour around the left or right flank. And I hope he does get a chance to run into Andrew, Prince Andrew. Because by now, I basically consider that like the original bromance to the original JD and Turk. That reference might be too old for some listeners, so Troy and Abed, or even, what's his name, Detective Peralta. Peralta and Boyle, there you go, Brooklyn Nine-Nine reference for you. That's pretty much how I see Pierre and Prince Andrew now, so I'd love to see them hang out again. Alright, that's going to do us for today's episode. Thanks for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.